Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzstrauber. On today's show, recognizing that Airbnb exists. My only guest today wrote a piece for Medium recently that we linked to in the show notes discussing a law that Arizona passed on home sharing. And in the pre-show, you mentioned that there are kind of two types of ways of looking at home sharing. There are states that kind of pretend it doesn't exist, and then there are those that have recognized it as a part of the economy and they're looking to regulate it. I'm joined by Carl Szabo, policy counsel for NetChoice, a group that represents a lot of different internet companies and a lot of good work on free speech and stuff like that. So Carl, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
Just before we jump in, tell us a little bit about your group, NetChoice, because it's an interesting situation you've got here.
Well, we're an e-commerce trade association, and essentially we are centered around the idea of breaking down barriers to e-commerce. And when you look at the issue of short-term rentals, home sharing, and the sharing economy writ large, what we're seeing is oftentimes legacy interests and legislators who just don't understand some of the nuances trying to erect barriers to e-commerce and using the guise of consumer protection to do that.
Right. Yeah. There's this classic false dichotomy of regulation means consumers are protected, deregulation means companies are protected and don't have to follow the law, when that's really a false choice. It's more about regulating in a smart way. So speaking of which, Arizona has taken the approach of recognizing the home sharing economy as a maybe separate entity or similar entity to short-term rentals in the traditional sense, like hotels. Tell us about the regulations that Arizona recently passed in their law and your thoughts on them.
Well, Arizona SB 1350, which Governor Ducey signed about a week ago, really takes a forward and intelligent approach to the state of short-term rentals. And rather than just burying its head in the sand, which Arizona, they have a lot of that, they decided to recognize that short-term rentals are going to happen, whether they say don't do this or whether they say do it. And they also recognized at the same time that the more burdens and regulations that you put on compliance suppresses compliance. And that makes sense. The harder you make it to do for somebody to comply with the law, the less likely they are to comply. And taking those components together, Arizona took a great approach. First step they did was they recognized that the local legislators are the ones most susceptible to what I like to call regulatory capture.
Right.
And all it takes is one or two neighbors who really just don't want STRs in their neighborhood, STR is short-term rental, to basically get a law passed saying, well, now it's illegal. So Arizona said, you know what, let's have all the state legislators do this and we'll basically regulate it at a state level. But at the same time, this isn't some state supremacy. They're still keeping at the state level the right to enforce health, safety, noise, and local ordinances. So it's the state saying it's legal, but it's still allowing the localities to do what they do best, which is kind of police what's going on.
Yeah. And one of the biggest challenges with the sharing economy in general is the clash between federal, state, and local government interests. And while many in the free market community and libertarians like the idea of subsidiarity, they like the idea of localities, you know, get the government as close to the people as possible, that can also be problematic for something like Airbnb, because if you have a hodgepodge of thousands of different counties with different regulations and sometimes one street, you know, on one side of the street, it's some regulations on the other side, it's different. That can be a problem. And local governments are naturally creatures of the state, and states have authority over them, just like the federal government has authority over states. In general, do you think that state preemption is appropriate in this space, you know, with the caveat that you certain things like noise might be better handled at the local level?
I wouldn't categorize it as state preemption. What I call it is state standardization. And that gets right at the point that you're raising, is to create a standard for STRs across the entire state. So it's not preempting localities. But what it's doing is it's creating a level set for the entire city, because what we've been seeing is cities across states taking wildly different approaches. I, for example, live in Montgomery County, Maryland, which my own county council is considering an approach on short-term rentals, which may be wildly different from Prince George's County, a neighboring county, which may be different from Howard County. And all of a sudden, you start seeing these micro fiefdoms within states. And that just doesn't make sense. We need to have a level set at a state level, but then allow localities to engage in local enforcement.
And the internet is inherently an interstate entity. So that's one of the reasons why we constantly have these conversations about the proper balancing between the roles of government. Because when I rent my Airbnb, I am probably, or if it's in another state, when I make the transaction, I'm not necessarily in the state where I'm going to be staying or in the county where I'm going to be staying. So while people might be squeamish about the idea of states clamping down on localities and telling them that Airbnb is legal, it kind of makes sense. I mean, this is not, e-commerce in general is interstate, and free marketers and federalists and people who are big on states' rights and local rights, that's a challenge for them in a lot of ways. Now, is there a risk, though, that in recognizing an industry, you end up over-regulating? So I see that Arizona requires, you know, platforms like Airbnb and HomeAway to register as online lodging marketplaces, collect taxes from hosts and guests. Do you see any problems with the Arizona model, or if not, that this could be abused by other states, you know, trying to extract revenue from the transactions?
Well, it's important to note that almost regardless of whether you're operating a short-term rental or you are Marriott, there's occupancy taxes that are applied, and you know, we've never said that they shouldn't apply. What Arizona does is it gives online platforms the option of collecting those occupancy taxes on behalf of the renters. Now, those taxes are owed, whether collected by the operator or paid for by the homeowner who's making their short-term rental available. And what they did in Arizona is they said, look, STRs and operators, if you want to collect on behalf of the homeowner, you can. And that may be a differentiator, a selling point for one operator over another. They'll say, you know what, if you rent through us, we'll take care of all the paperwork. And Maryland, actually, a state that is very familiar with taxes, I like to say, and I'm a Maryland resident, so I kind of have a joke immunity on this. Maryland has never met a tax they didn't like. And HB 1361 was a Maryland bill. And what it would do is it would allow operators to collect and remit occupancy taxes on behalf of short-term renters. Maryland actually didn't pass this feature because what you saw is the legacy interests. You saw the big hotels like Marriott coming in to oppose this bill. They're saying, no, 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 you shouldn't allow operators to collect and remit these taxes on behalf of short-term rentals, because the hotel operators knew that this would create legitimacy for short-term rentals in the Maryland marketplace.
And there's also, forgive me for being cynical, but there's even more to it than that, because one of the problems that people run into when they start participating in the sharing economy or gig economy, whatever you want to call it, is they're not used to having to manage their own taxes. Me personally, I've always worked in kind of traditional office jobs where the taxes were taken care of. I don't have all sorts of assets. It's not a very complex process for me. And there are people probably who are in similar situations. And then they start driving for Uber and they're making all this money and they get excited. And then they forget that come April 15th, there's going to be hell to pay if they haven't been keeping track of this stuff themselves. So listeners, don't underestimate just how important it is for a platform to offer something like that, because that could really help ease people into a new situation. And of course, if hotels want to discourage people from participating in the sharing economy, they want to make it more difficult. And what better way to discourage people than to prevent them from having their taxes managed, so they get they resent Airbnb or HomeAway, and they get annoyed with the process when they realize they owe a big tax bill. So that's, you know, getting to your point about regulatory capture. There's always that danger that local interests, established interests can just go to a small set of politicians, because some of these are small towns, and just dictate terms.
Yeah, and invariably what I hear from legislators are the, well, I'll give you an example, a couple of arguments against Montgomery County, where Maryland, where I live, adopting short-term rentals was, the obvious noise complaint. Oh, this is going to turn into a big party street. To that, I say, if there's a loud noise in my neighborhood, whether it's from short-term rentals or my next-door neighbor's kids throwing a house party, what do? I pick up the phone, I call the police. It doesn't matter whether it's an STR or if it's my neighbor's kids. Another complaint I hear is homeowners association saying, well, we don't want them here. Well, good news. Homeowners associations, you can include that in your bylaws and make them illegal. So there are a lot of opportunities out there to get this right. And what Arizona said is, look, let's make it legal. Let's create a way for people to register. That way we can have some better oversight. We can kind of get an idea of who's engaged in the market. We can revoke licenses for the bad actors, for those who are having these loud house parties and doing nothing to restrict them. But it creates a mechanism for STRs to grow, short-term rentals to grow, the economy to grow, tax collection for the state, and better oversight. So it's a win-win-win-win for everyone who's not a legacy interest whose business might be a little impeded on that. And one of the things that we've heard from hotels is that short-term rentals are going to destroy our businesses, or, you know, level playing field is always a favorite phrase. But it turns out rentals in hotel rooms and use of hotels is higher this year than it was last year. Prices are also higher this year than they were last year. So hotels are renting out more rooms at higher rates. And to argue that the expansion of short-term rentals and the short-term rental economy is harming them kind of rings a little false when they're renting more rooms at higher prices.
Yeah, so, and a lot of the arguments made against Airbnb, oh, it's going to drive up real estate. Oh, it wastes real estate on rentals when it could be for housing. You can say all of those things about hotels. That's kind of the hilarious thing. It doesn't occur to people necessarily because hotels are established. But if you look at a giant Marriott, you could say, hey, that could be a giant apartment building instead. You're wasting real estate. So those types of arguments, at least be consistent when you make them. Now, one of the more interesting things about the Arizona law for the tech community, privacy advocates in particular, is its approach to privacy. And one of the issues we've seen with companies like Uber and Lyft, Uber recently put out a transparency report that kind of talks about this. You know, setting aside the debate over data collection that private companies do, you might be a skeptic of the type of advertising model that Google has, and you might be squeamish about all this private data collection. That said, government is a kind of separate issue in that. So you could be as pro data collection as you want, pro big data, and still be concerned that a company like Airbnb holds all this data and then local regulators will just ask them for stuff. And one of the problems we saw with Uber is that they didn't even really, when they get asked for things like, how many drivers do you have? Where are they going? All this stuff. The regulator doesn't actually say why they want it. It's almost like the old saying, regulator is going to regulate. They have, you know, maybe nothing better to do, or they just feel like this is part of their purview. So there's a real privacy implication there. I'm a renter. I don't want my information all over the government telling me that I'm a renter. You know, some hotel guy comes after me because he sees my information gets leaked. How does the Arizona law protect users' privacy?
Well, it's not just the renters, but the travelers as well. You know, I may want to go to Phoenix. I don't necessarily want the Arizona government to know that.
Right.
It's I should be able to freely travel. Well, what the Arizona law does is it allows the platforms to kind of aggregate data. And as long as the numbers match the tax collection, they're okay. Now, there's still provisions in there for, you know, safety and stuff like that. And that's good. That's important. That needs to be there. But at the same time, it doesn't have this show me the books. Show me every traveler who's come through your system, because I want to see where they're going. Now, that's kind of the opposite of what we've seen in some other jurisdictions. Progressive areas like Chicago, liberal city, actually going in the opposite direction. Right now, mayor there is trying to push through his ordinance. And what it would do, it would force platforms to disclose not just who's engaging in short-term rentals, who's making their houses available, but who's staying in those houses to the government.
Kind of creepy a little bit.
Oh, it's very creepy. But and Chicago doesn't stop there. Its problems go well beyond the privacy restriction. My favorite is it has a provision in there that says only six condos in an entire apartment building can engage in short-term rentals. Well, I used to live in Chicago. I lived in an apartment building with several hundred units. So what you're telling me is you're going to have neighbors fighting neighbors to be the licensed short-term rental in that building. And that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, what if I want to do it one time? I mean, that's one of the nice things about the sharing economy is it's flexible. And when you start pigeonholing people, like now your new job is someone who rents their house and we're going to regulate you as this renter person. They could be spending 99% of their time doing other things and just one time they want to use Airbnb. And now they're fighting with every other condo owner in the apartment building to become one of six. That's kind of crazy. And I kind of wanted to pivot to California. There's a lot of problems in California, and it's hilariously ironic because San Francisco is where Airbnb is headquartered, and they had to defeat a proposition about short-term renting. They've bumped up against regulators a lot. So contrasting Arizona is what you would argue a sensible approach. What's going on in cities like LA and San Francisco, where, again, progressive cities but prone to regulation?
What I think you're seeing is something that you hit on earlier on in the broadcast, which is this fear, this belief that regulations protect consumers and keep businesses in check. And Arizona said, you know what? Maybe so, but let's do it intelligently.
Right.
San Francisco basically tried to pass Proposition F, which was soundly defeated. It was by a city vote. And they didn't stop there. So what we're seeing now is a resolution proposed by some of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. They're kind of like the city council for San Francisco. And they want to hold platforms strictly liable to make sure that every short-term rental on their platform not only displays a license number, but is in full compliance with city regulations. Now, your listeners know that Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says, whoa, whoa, whoa. You can't do that. You can't hold a platform liable for what is posted on there by just people.
Yeah. And just to refresh listeners' memory, we've talked about this on the show in many different contexts. And I would argue that it's Section 230 passed in 1996, extremely forward-looking, very important to the internet's development, an example of government making a very smart decision that then led to things like Facebook and Google. Because you can imagine 1.6 billion Facebook users. It's pretty ridiculous to expect them to police every single thing. And if someone posts something inappropriate or a copyright violation or whatever, this law basically says go after the individual who committed the crime, not the company. And that's extremely important because without that, it would be a field day for lawsuits.
And it's not a novel concept. San Francisco doesn't hold the San Francisco gate responsible for going and checking every rental listing in their classified section.
Right. And that's the traditional system that predates Airbnb. Right.
And if I were to go into a San Francisco coffee shop and put up a flyer on their bulletin board saying room for rent, would you hold that coffee shop liable? No, that's ridiculous.
You should go do that.
But San Francisco is saying, well, because you do it on the internet, because you do it on a HomeAway or an Airbnb, you are now HomeAway and Airbnb, you are now liable and you need to go check to make sure that that room that's available is in full compliance with every one of our ordinances. And you're not asking that for newspapers, you're not asking that for coffee shops, but because it's online, you're gonna ask for it for short-term rental operators? That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's a constant problem with the gig economy, and it's really a definitional problem. It's the failure to recognize that this is not necessarily a new type of economy that has never existed before. It's just enabled more by the internet, or it's facilitated by the internet. You brought up the classifieds. That is the classic example of me renting my home through a paid newspaper advertisement. And when lawmakers fail to see the connections and the analogies and the analogous industries and how these are not exactly new concepts, they get scared. And that's how you end up with people freaking out over the sharing economy. Oh my God, it's taking over. No one's going to have any jobs. It's the share the scraps economy, robot, you know, Terminator, all that stuff. So really, it's important to point out that this is not new. It's just different because it's on the internet. But just because something's on the internet doesn't mean it should necessarily be treated more harshly or less harshly just be reasonable, regardless of the medium that is used to connect people and share stuff.
Right. And it's not just a San Francisco problem. Portland, for example, basically brought suit against HomeAway back in October for making sure that all of the listings on it were in full compliance with taxes, with these occupancy taxes we described earlier. And they expected the operator, HomeAway, to have collected all the occupancy taxes for every listing on their platform. Well, they got hit up for $2.5 million. They're fighting it out in court right now. But did the city of Portland go after the Portland newspaper? Did it go after the hundreds of Portland coffee shops that have room for rent? No. They decided to go after HomeAway because, as you said, it's new. It's the internet. It's different. Well, it's really not.
And the potential to extract revenue is so much easier because you could imagine that going after one deep-pocketed company, definitely true in the case of Airbnb, huge valuation, like $40 billion or something like that last time I checked. That's a lot easier if you're trying to extract rent from a company than going after a coffee shop or a newspaper. It's just, I'm very cynical about these things because I see it so often, but I can't help but think a lot of this is driven by regulators just wanting to get money from these companies, and they're annoyed that they can come into their community, their state, and not kiss the ring and bow down to the entrenched interests. They are much less interested in that. There's a generational gap between people who use these things and people who don't. To wrap up the show, any parting thoughts, recommendations for state lawmakers, recommendations for federal lawmakers, regulators in general?
It's funny, typically, I'm not out there saying we should pass new laws. It's kind of a rare state for me. But when it comes to the sharing economy, it's like what you just said. There needs to be a recognition by legislators of the way to do this right. And there is a bit of a kissing of the ring that needs to be done and a legalization that should be inscribed into law, even though it's nothing different. And what I would implore legislators, regulators across country to do is to look at what was done in Arizona. It is a shining example of the right way to approach this scenario. Make the rules easy to comply with. That increases compliance. Create a statewide standard. Make it possible for localities to do their jobs and really enable this new revolution. Because as you said at the opening, there are two types of communities. There are those that recognize home sharing is happening and take steps to enable it and regulate it in a reasonable way, and those that pretend it's not happening. Because it's going to happen regardless. You might as well make it work for you.
Well, that's it for today's show. Check out Carl's excellent Medium post. It's actually on our Medium publication, the Tech Policy Corner. It's also linked to in the show notes for today's episode. My guest has been Carl Szabo, Policy Counsel for NetChoice, a advocacy organization for e-commerce. Carl, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Let us know what you think of the show on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store where you can leave us a review because it will help others find the show. Feel free to always pitch ideas, guests, send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. And thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.